Welcome to WMUK.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
The title of this press release talked about philanthropic trends in 2018. Are these just trends for 2018 or 2018 and beyond?
Oh, I think they're certainly larger trends. It's rare for trends in our field, especially to be only in 1 year. And so we're really trying to spot things that are happening that are really fundamental, paths of evolution of this broader field. And those certainly take a long time. I should also point out that when we talk about philanthropy here at the center and really in our field more broadly, we mean philanthropy in a broad sense. So it covers also trends about how things are happening in the nonprofit world, you know, certain dynamics that are going on in terms of how people are coming together in communities to address problems through various activities that they do voluntarily or through their nonprofit organization. So it's not just giving of money in the traditional sense of philanthropy. So these trends are much broader than that, which is another reason why they're sort of more than just applying to 2018.
Let's start with one that really jumped out to me, and that involves younger givers. And you were involved with this particular research. One of the biggest trends that intrigued me is the prediction that Generation Xers and millennials with capacity for making major gifts will likely be the most significant generation of philanthropists in history. Can you put some flesh on that?
This is one that's going to be significant for many decades to come, and we're just beginning to get a handle on what the next generation of major donors want to do. I just published a book on this. The book's called Generation Impact. And what we say in the book is basically that the most significant philanthropists ever are just coming into their roles right now as donors. It's a very dramatic statement, but it has a lot to support it. We know on the one hand that the next generation, that is the sort of Gen Xers and millennials who are just coming onto the scene, either making their own money or being the beneficiaries of this historic wealth transfer and wealth concentration that we see going on, they're going to simply have more resources to give as big donors for the next several decades, more resources than any group of major donors in the past. And they really want to give those in new ways. So they want to change how they give and how they interact with the nonprofit organizations that are, frankly, very dependent on them as their major donors. We talk in the book and in this piece that we published by the Johnson Center, really what's happening is that they want to give to the same causes, education, healthcare, poverty, these kind of causes that have been the focus of philanthropy for a long time, but they want to give in new ways to them. They want to innovate how we address some of those problems. And I think that's really where this fundamental change is happening. Much more engaged major donors that are trying out new things, willing to experiment on new approaches, and they want to be much more close with the organizations that they support. They want to be more hands-on to give their talent as well as their considerable treasure, and that means that the nonprofits have to engage these major donors in different ways.
So is that the main way that they're different, that they want to be a little more hands-on?
Yes. I mean, again, there's many ways in which things will continue. They still want to give with their families, and they still give from a place of values, being driven by their values, and they want to give to the same causes. But there is going to be a fundamental change, and it revolves around those issues of how they want to engage with organizations and how they want to create impact. You know, the old tool belt that was available to big donors in the past, which was primarily about, writing checks to established nonprofit organizations, that's going to continue, but it's going to be one tool among many in the tool belt that these major donors want to achieve. So they're going to want to change how they invest their assets. They're going to want to change how they give with other people in collaborative ways. And they want to, change how deeply they're involved with one or two organizations that are their clear focus rather than the more traditional approach, which is spread out their money. One of our people we interviewed called it the peanut butter approach, where you sort of spread your money out over multiple different organizations in a small way to each and hope that impact sort of flourishes at some point. They want to really focus on one organization, go deep with that group and try to achieve change.
You know, I want to dig a little bit deeper in terms of the demographics of this group, and I want to make sure that I'm understanding this. Are you really more referring to just a segment of Generation Xers and millennials? Because I thought that generation may not be as wealthy as their parents and that they're living at home for a longer period of time for financial reasons.
Yep, that's very good clarification. So When we talk about the significant major donors that are coming up in the Gen X and millennial generations, we're talking about those that have the capacity for major giving, for big giving. And it's really part of a larger economic trend that, of course, most people are aware of, and it's certainly affecting, you know, we're in the broader society, and it certainly is found in the philanthropic sector, maybe even more dramatically. This idea that, you know, resources are becoming more and more concentrated in fewer and fewer individuals and families. In the nonprofit sector and in the philanthropic sector, it means that those people who have the ability to make significant gifts, those that are the beneficiaries of this wealth concentration, and then, as I said, wealth transfer that's going on, where, you know, baby boomers and the greatest generation are now passing wealth on in their families to the next generation. You know, they are the one that, you know, they've always been significant in the field of philanthropy. We've always had the lion's share of giving is being done by a small percentage of major donors. But that's going to be increasing even more in the future, and the beneficiaries of that wealth, you know, transfer and that sort of concentration of wealth, those people who are going to, in the Gen X and millennial generations, who are going to be able to give significantly, those are the ones that we're talking about as having a real impact on the field for you know, in 2018 and for decades to come.
And just out of curiosity, where are you getting this projection from? What are you basing this on?
This was based on several years of research that we've been doing among these rising major donors. So it's a project that the Johnson Center for Philanthropy at Grand Valley has done in my program here on Focus on Family Philanthropy. We've done in collaboration with an organization in New York called 2164. And we've done 75 in-depth interviews and a survey with 300 of these folks who are in this small group of very influential major donors and major donors to be. But the point about the importance of this group is not something that just we're saying. This is something that the field broadly recognizes, and certainly nonprofits and fundraisers, if you talk to them, they are very aware of how important the next generation of these major donors. They know how important they're going to be, and they're trying to figure out, okay, how can we engage them in a way that supports our organization. And that's what we try to give them a little bit of advice on.
You also have done some research where one of the trends is more global giving. Can you expound on that trend?
Yeah, so I think, you know, this is, again, one of those things that people have an inkling of. If you, you know, watch the news, you know that there are billionaires being created in China. There are more billionaires in China now than in the U.S., and they're being created at a faster pace. And that's true in many other places. And we see, you know, the giving pledge that was started by Bill and Melinda Gates and Warren Buffett to try and encourage billionaires to commit half of their fortunes to charity. That's now going global. And they've very explicitly wanted to go global with that, to try to encourage giving. There's a lot of longstanding traditions of giving, of course, in every culture around the globe. Charitable giving of some sort exists in all societies. But what's changing now is the sort of the globalization of the philanthropic activities and institutions and norms, really. So that you know, the way that we're familiar with philanthropy through, you know, foundations and major donors making, you know, long-term commitments and those kind of things, and being very public about their giving in certain ways, you know, those are some of the things that we're beginning to see spread across the globe, in the same way that many things are sort of spreading globally, where cultural norms are becoming, more broadly practiced in different places rather than just in the West. And that has positive and negative outcomes, of course. You know, it's great that these newly wealthy, significant donors who would be the philanthropists automatically in some ways if they were in the United States in places like China are turning their attention to what can I do to really, you know, lead change and create impact in my community. That's fantastic. It does also mean that we face the challenge of, you know, is it going to be that what academics would call cultural hegemony? You know, that the Western way approaches to doing things may not always fit in other places around the globe, and we need to be careful to not just assume that our way of doing things is going to be the best for Brazil or for, you know, Australia or Western Europe. So that's the challenge we face. But certainly the trend is that philanthropy and the practices of philanthropy are becoming more global, and there's more opportunity for people to give in significant ways around the globe. And that's something, again, that's a challenge that's facing all of us as we become a much more global society.
And another trend is collaborative giving and giving circles. I think you kind of referenced a little bit of that earlier. I think you said some of the younger givers like to do that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's this is one, by the way, that's interesting to the broader set of younger donors rather than just those who are at the top end. The idea of crowdfunding, when you have a cause that you want to get behind, or there's a disaster, or somebody has a personal challenge, there's, you know, the idea of using these crowdfunding platforms, using social networks and other ways to build support among a broad base of smaller donors, and people helping out in certain ways, but turning to those collaborative vehicles to do that, to do that funding, I think is certainly something that going to be even more significant in 2018 across the board. And then if you look at those people who are really sort of focused on philanthropy at a higher level, they are very attracted, particularly in the next generation, very attracted to collaborative giving vehicles where they join with other donors. In whether that's a giving circle or that's a funder collaborative or any number of other ways that they come together. But the point is, what they get from that collaborative is two things. They get leverage, that is, you know, they pool their money with other donors in a way that they can make an even more significant impact on what they're focused on, whether that's poverty or women and girls, the environment, climate change, whatever. They get leverage, but they also get learning. By giving with other people and learning together about problems, they're able to improve their own giving, be more strategic in their own giving by learning from peers that they engage with in these institutions. And so the model of the giving circle and the model of the collaborative giving approach is very powerful and one that I think is going to continue to go. We certainly know from our research it's going to continue to grow.
And then there are some trends that appear to be driven by the changing demographics in America, essentially the browning of America. Could you talk about some of those trends in philanthropy? One, I know, dealing with equity and inclusion.
Yeah, well, this is one that I think you see certainly with major institutions in the field, very well-known institutions, including some of those here in Michigan, most notably the W.K. Kellogg Foundation in Battle Creek. But really, it's true about the Ford Foundation, which is taking a very direct focus now on Detroit and other giving back in Michigan. Both of those institutions have dedicated, clear institutional commitments to funding in ways that advance race equity and that address racial inequality. And that is an emphasis, a point of emphasis across the grant making in both of those institutions that, you know, has really come to the fore in the last few years and is infusing their work, will certainly infuse all of their work in Michigan as well as elsewhere in 2018. But they're not the only ones. There's a significant, it's not as though race is a new issue for philanthropy or certainly for the nonprofit sector and those people working for change in communities. But I think it's becoming even more clear as a priority, and we're recognizing the complexity of addressing race and bring concerns of equity into our giving and into our the ways in which we act in communities together to create change. People are trying to be much more careful and sophisticated about how they talk about race equity, how they engage with communities, full range of diversity within their own communities. If we're talking about place-based giving and place-based activity, it's no longer just say, you know, we have an organizational value that commits us to diversity inclusion. It's what does that look like on the ground? What does that look like when we go out and try to address a concern about, you know, schools in our community? Well, if we want to do that in a way that's inclusive and committed deeply to equity, that's going to mean certain kinds of practices of engaging with the community. That's going to mean certain ways of using information and gathering information in inclusive ways that help us to really address that problem. So I think it's not that race, you know, the concerns about race equity and concerns about in inclusivity and diversity are new to 2018. It's that we're beginning to understand the deeply complex and pervasive ways in which we need to engage with those issues and have them inform our work across all aspects of the work. I think that's what's really new.
Earlier, we were talking about more global giving, but one of the trends also is place-based philanthropy, a more focus on organizations and goals that are specific to a geographic area. You kind of referenced it in your response just a few seconds ago.
Yeah, you know, this is, I find this fascinating that, and you know, it's been something that's been going on for a long time, ever since we've had the mantra of think globally, act locally, right? This is, in some ways, we're seeing the full, development and flourishing of that idea in many, many different ways, where people are both paying more attention and recognizing how things are moving on a global scale. We certainly have more information about global problems. We're much more globally aware. And so globalization is clearly happening and certainly affecting the nonprofit sector and philanthropy. But that doesn't mean that local attention and focus on place-based giving and being more hyper-local many people being more hyper-local in their own personal attention to what they want to give to and be focused on. And I think it's good news for local communities, of course, that, you know, if you have people in your community that really want to do good in the world, and they're only focused on giving to communities that they hear about across the globe that are struggling, but they forget about poverty or education or healthcare or these other concerns within their own community, that could be a problem. So I think it's good news that we continue to see focus on place-based giving and trying to improve place-based giving while we're also seeing globalization. And I think there's innovation that's happening at the local level as well. So it's not just that we're saying the trend is that people are continuing to pay attention to their local communities. It's that they're turning their sort of entrepreneurial, innovative, and evidence-based, really data-focused approach to giving and to solving problems to the local level as well. So there's new ways in which people are using data. There's new ways in which people are trying to experiment with new ideas in local areas. And so it's in some ways the giving in local areas to communities around this country is becoming in some ways a sort of a hotbed of innovation experimentation to try to then see what works. And if it works in one community like Kalamazoo, maybe it's going to work in, you know, Reno, or it could work in Phoenix or somewhere. So I think, you know, local giving and place-based giving and the innovation that's going on there is a really exciting thing that's happening, particularly because we can share those models with other communities if we find something that really works in one place.
Excuse me. I know that another trend is being data-driven, that donors want to see impact, and that might pose certain kind of challenges. I was reading here for certain nonprofit organizations, this might be an extra burden on them.
Yes. Yeah, it certainly is. One of the things that we continue to encourage funders who, and this is often institutional funders, who require considerable gathering of data and measurement of impact and measurement of outcomes in a way that they can report back as a requirement of getting grants. You know, many foundations will require the nonprofit to spend a lot of time and attention to gathering information, tracking data, and reporting that back. And they do that for good reasons. We continue to encourage them to make sure that they fund that work of gathering the information because it is such a burden and because it's continuing to be very important to track that information and to make sure we have measurables and good data on, are we creating the change that we set out to create? How do we need to change our model based on data, the input from data, in order to be more effective? I think what's going on in terms of a trend point of view, though, is that we've, for many years, if you talk to people in the nonprofit sector, they're gonna say, well, I've been, you know, being pushed to gather data and to find, you know, metrics that show the outcomes that I'm creating in my community. That's been a trend for many years, and we've known that. What's really new and sort of coming to the fore within that context is a couple of things. One is the focus of that data on really complex solutions, and that, you know, things like systems change, in which it's not just how many kids are we bringing into our program, and that's what we measure, and that's what we report as our data, but how are we working with multiple other actors in our community to create fundamental systems change, and how do we measure that systems change? So that's one way in which, it's in some ways, it's becoming just much more sophisticated how we think about the data that we gather and how we want to use that data. And people are inventing new ways of you know, evaluating things in ways that are really useful to communities. I think the focus on equity is another, you know, that sort of enters into this conversation as well, where people are recognizing the need to gather data in ways that are more inclusive and that measure things in ways that matter to those people who are, you know, working deeply on the ground in communities of color and communities, disadvantaged communities, recognizing what are the metrics that matter to them and how can we work with them to gather that information in a way that's really culturally sensitive and that recognizes what really matters to those communities. So I think it's the you know, data has always been important, and the emphasis of funders on, you know, asking nonprofits to gather data and to report back measurable metrics has always been there for the last several years. But what's different is the sophistication and the depth of that information and how we want to use that information and how careful we are in gathering it so we know that it's right for that community. That's really the trend we're talking about.
Another trend is partnership between government and the philanthropic community.
Yeah, well, this is, you know, it's interesting. This is another one where it's not as though government has never partnered with nonprofits and all of a sudden we're saying they are. It's that the innovation and creativity, if you will, within those partnerships is at a level that it's never been before, and we certainly see that sort of innovation and change in that space continuing in 2018. And in fact, Michigan is one of the, and Kalamazoo specifically, is one of those places where that innovation that's happening in the sort of the ways in which philanthropy and government work together to solve, you know, public problems and to advance, you know, public issues, that's, you know, the innovation that's happening here in Michigan and in places like Kalamazoo are being looked at by other communities as an you know, in some ways, an experiment in how government and the philanthropic and the nonprofit sector can work together to address problems. So I think 2018 is going to be a time in which we watch closely to see just, you know, how those, in some ways, new innovations in that, you know, government philanthropic partnership in communities evolves, especially in communities in Michigan, to see what's working, what's not working. How do we continue to have an accountable government and a free, you know, philanthropic space while they continue to work with each other? What are the challenges that are coming up? How does the public view these kind of partnerships? These are all big open questions going forward, but it's certainly going to continue because our problems are acute and because we want to be smart about addressing them. Trying new ways of partnering government and philanthropy in the nonprofit sector, trying those partnerships is going to continue in places like Kalamazoo and Flint and Detroit and Grand Rapids and elsewhere. But we're going to be careful about assessing, okay, what's working, what's not working with these. And by the end of 2018, hopefully we have some better understanding of, well, this is how to do this in other communities that are facing similar challenges.
What do you find is driving those partnerships between government and philanthropy? Is it a dwindling dollars at the government level or just trying something different?
You know, it's interesting. That's a good question. There's a lot of things that have historically driven this partnership. You know, I don't think we should discount the distrust of government, which has grown in the last several decades. The idea that you know, people don't want big government to take care of problems, community problems, and so I think that's part of it as well. But I certainly think that the you know, changes in the tax base, and I also think the acuteness of the problems and the recognition that you know, that we may have a flourishing economy, but that there are still deep community problems that need to be addressed. And the willingness to try new ways of addressing those problems, I think, is partly where this experiment, this idea of, you know, experimenting with new models and trying to find partnerships that work, that certainly is part of what's driving it. I think also the, you know, the recognition on the philanthropic side and the nonprofit side that maybe some models taken from the, you know, entrepreneur space or from business could work and at least let's try them out. And so there's sort of this new entrepreneurial kind of approach of some major donors and big nonprofits who are saying, okay, well, let's try to find a new way of addressing these problems. Let's not think in a silo of we just have to do things in the traditional way within our own sector, and government is over there, and business is over there, and we're here, and none of those are interacting in significant ways with each other. If it's going to create more impact on those troubling community problems for us to partner in new ways, then let's try to partner. And frankly, this is one of those things that the next generation is also very interested in, is they say, we need to have impact on these longstanding challenges like poverty in local communities. And if partnering in new ways, breaking down those barriers that, you know, exist between the government sector and the philanthropic sector and the business sector, if that's going to lead us to more impact on these problems, then why not try those new partnerships and those new ways of working together? So I think that's part of that sort of entrepreneurial spirit is certainly part of what's driving this as well.
And finally, another finding from the Johnson Center for Philanthropy, it has to do with the repealing of the Johnson Amendment. It says that it can be kind of a game changer for nonprofits. One, could you tell us what is the Johnson Amendment and where does that stand and why is that such a big deal?
The good news is that ended up at the last minute being taken out of the new tax bill. And so it doesn't mean that it's off the table as a policy option, and that's why we have it in this report. But it's not anything that's in the current. It has not been passed into law, which is where it looked for many towards the end of 2017, like it was going to be a part of the tax bill. But it's not. So that's the good news. But to explain what it is, so the Johnson Amendment goes back to the time when Lyndon Johnson was in Congress rather than being president, and it's an amendment that was passed that precludes tax-exempt entities from engaging in political activities. I think it was 1954 was when it was originally passed, and it's been in place ever since. And so when a simple way to think of it is when you hear about churches or religious institutions getting in trouble with the IRS because they become political around an election time. You know, they have somebody come in and
support or oppose a political candidate.
Yeah. Yep. The Johnson Amendment precludes tax-exempt entities from engaging in that kind of political activity, and so the people who are arguing for repealing the Johnson Amendment want to free up. They're doing so in the name of kind of freedom of speech for nonprofits and for religious organizations and others who are tax exempt. They want them to be able to be more politically, to not curtail their speech. But most of the people in the nonprofit sector are against repealing the Johnson Amendment because it would make the nonprofit sector much more political than it's been. And it would, in some ways, back to this question of what role should the nonprofit sector play compared to government and other things. One of the benefits of having nonprofits be engaged in trying to do public work is that they do so in a way that isn't political in the same deep sense that the way government operates is necessarily political. So it feels like a restriction on the nonprofit sector, but it's a restriction that allows them to operate in public in a way that is beneficial for the public. And so taking that away and making them political entities has some real consequences for the sector and for its legitimacy, frankly.
What in all these findings surprised you most?
Well, I think, you know, what we're trying to do with this report is try to give people a sense of, you know, we know that there's a lot of change going on. We know that those who work in the nonprofit sector know that there is, you know, dramatic shifts in certain ways in the way that they're able to do their work, in the way they interact with those who give them the resources that are necessary to do that work. And what we try to do in this report is say, okay, well, here, let's put a name on some of those trends that are happening. What are the nature of those changes, and what do they look like going forward, so that those people who work in the sector can have a better sense of where things are going, can start to prepare themselves in their organization. And so I think for me, looking across these trends, we talked about it a little bit, but the one that's really interesting and somewhat surprising is that there continues to be this focus on local communities, and that many people who are, you know, even more globally aware than any generation or any, you know, at any time in our past, we in some ways know even more about global problems than we might know about problems in our local community. But that doesn't mean that we're no longer committed and interested in giving locally. And people are working in multinational ways. Their attention is more at the national stage for politics often. Their jobs may not necessarily be connected to the local community, but there's something that continues to get people engaged and excited about solving problems at the local level. And I think that it's good news, but it's one of those things that continues to be surprising in an increasingly global world, that people continue to want to be focused on local communities. And so I think, again, things that are happening in innovative ways in local communities, places like Kalamazoo, those are going to be maybe the hotbeds of innovation and exciting changes in the field going forward if others can pay attention to what's happening in those local local areas doing interesting things. And so I think that local focus is really exciting and something we want to look for in 2018.
Mr. Moody, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Yes, thanks for having me again. We appreciate it.